Good morning, everyone. Good morning. I'm hoping that you're seeing the screen. Okay, so we fixed the problem from last week, and I'm happy to be with you this morning. I want to divide my class into two. The first part of the class, I want to talk briefly about another great rabbi who just left this world on Sunday, Motzei Shabbos, and that's Rav Eliezer Waldman, Zichrono Levracha. We're talking about a gentleman that comes from very much our world. First of all, Kiryat Arba is very close to Efrat. Number two, we're talking about someone with American origins. He was born in Petah Tikva, but spent his formative years in New York. He went to Tor Vadas, I believe, or Chaim Berlin, I forgot. He eventually went to YU. He got a degree from Brooklyn College, if I'm not mistaken. So he was fluent in Hebrew and English, like many of us. So definitely from our world geographically, and I would even say from a culture point of view, he's very much in our camp. And I want to share two things from Rav Waldman. I was not his student. I didn't learn in Kiryat Arba. I heard a lot about him. I once heard a lecture from him. I'll never forget it because he kept on saying the same thing again and again. In which I learned that maybe in lectures, if you say the same thing again and again, people remember your main point. He kept on saying, Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Al Pi Torat Yisrael. And he said that endless times, and you don't forget it. Here I am repeating it word for word, letter for letter. My own Rebbe, Rav Amital, did the same trick. He would give the same speech over and over again. And therefore, to this day, I can quote that speech. So from this perspective, that's when I met him. I wasn't his student, but I'd like to share two things from him in his memory, his Torah. The first is an interesting vort I heard from Rabbi Langer. He said, how come we're called Bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel, and the non-Jews are called traditionally what? What are non-Jews traditionally called? Not goyim, that's actually a very modern concept. Jewishly, you should know, Harold, a goy probably means a Jew. How do I know that? Did you daven mincha this past Shabbos? Umi ke'amcha Yisrael? Anyone? Goy echad ba'aretz. The word may be nochri, but not goy. Anyone? Halachically, what do we call them? We divide the world into two. There's Bnei Yisrael. And there's Bnei Noach, right? Bnei Noach are the offsprings of Noach, because there was a flood, so any human being comes out of that family. And the Noachites are obligated in seven Noachite commandments. We're obligated in 613. That's a pretty good deal, Arthur. I don't know how you did that, but maybe math wasn't exactly your profession in school. In any case, an interesting deal. Ask Rav Waldman, how come we call them Bnei Noach? We could have called them a Nochri. We could have called them other things. And he said the following. Noach comes from the word lanuach. Rest. A Ben Noach knows how to rest. A Ben Noach knows that he doesn't have to aspire more. He could be where he is. He doesn't have to be aggressive. He doesn't necessarily have to have aspirations. He can rest. You don't necessarily go up to a non-Jew and say to them, spiritually, I think you're not in a good place. You should push yourself more. If they're keeping the seven Noahide commandments, shein genick. Not so, he said, with Jews. We Jews are called Bnei Yisrael. That term, Yisrael, where is the first time in the Torah that it's mentioned? Correct. And how does Yaakov's Malach explain the change? He says, your name will be Yisrael. Why? Ki sarita im Elohim ve'im anashim batuchal. Because you struggled with God and people and you came out successful. So said Rav Waldman, we're called Bnei Yisrael because we struggle. We aspire. We never rest on our laurels. We are always asking, what's the next step? And therefore, we're called Bnei Yisrael, and the non-Jews are called Bnei Noach. And I believe there's a lot of truth to that. Obviously, I don't believe for a moment that every Jew out there is aspiring, and I don't believe for a moment that every non-Jew is just sitting and resting on their laurels, but it's an interesting perspective on our mutual jobs in this world. So that's the first little Torah I wanted to share with you, and just add to it a pasuk in Zechariah. When Zechariah the Navi says that we have to keep mitzvot, he has something very interesting in there. And I quote the pasuk here in the bottom of the screen. If you follow in my ways and you stay away from Isurim, and you'll guard my home and my courtyard, meaning you'll keep mitzvot, you'll be a good Jew, anyone want to translate those six words? I'll help you. Venatati lecha, and I will give you. What's mehalchim?
People.
What?
People.
People? I don't think people.
We're mehalchim, we're not
omdim. Okay, people. What do you, mehalchim, literally, what does the word mean?
To go.
To go, to move, correct? In the car today, if you have a stick shift, it's called hiluchim. Mehalchim ben ha'omdim. Malachim are omdim. They have a job. They don't have to do any more than that. They're omdim. Jews, on the other hand, are mehalchim. They are constantly on the move. They are constantly looking for the next job, for the next miftza, for the next aspiration. So if you keep my mitzvot, then eventually, the result should be, you should be mehalchim. Mehalchim amongst omdim. And that, I think, is a beautiful, beautiful pasuk in Zechariah about our jobs as Jew. The second, more political point of view that I wanted to say in the name of Rav Waldman, I heard it from Rabbi Stephen Przanski, Shlita. Rabbi Przanski quoted in his name the following. He asked him, how could it be that these big ideologues from the right, when they get to power, they sort of leave the ideology outside the door? He wasn't talking about the current political situation. He was talking about, for example, Arik Sharon. Arik Sharon, who built every single settlement around Yehuda and Shomron and Aza, and then one day becomes prime minister and does the Hitnatkut, the terrible deportation from Gaza. And he asked, how can it be? They were ideologues, they were rightists, they even put their money where their mouth was because they built settlements. How could it be that one day, boom, it's out?
Don't we generally say they had such heavy political and legal problems that just went along?
I really don't want in this year to deal with a political explanation to the situation. Okay, I want to deal with it on a theological level. So you could say that in a specific case, he was under indictment. He wanted the police to get off his back, and therefore he did what he did. That's out there, yes, but that's for political analysts. That's not me.
But if it's the truth, then there is a
theological. Okay, again, Bruce, that's your opinion, and you're entitled to it. And there's many that support what you say. And there's even studies, and there's even records and whatnot. But again, that's not our topic this morning. Our topic this morning is more theological. So let's stay in the theological, okay? Or I'll say it differently, Bruce. Let's forget about Arik Sharon. How can it be that Begin, who said absolutely never deport a Jew, and he gave back all the Sinai, and he deported Jews? Okay, many examples.
No, that's a better case. That's a better case.
Okay, so Begin. We'll talk about Begin. So said Rav Waldman, because their ideology was based on political considerations, security considerations, sociological considerations. The bottom line with those considerations are they're human-based, and they have limits. Namely, when it's not very convenient, you don't do it. But when your particular point of view is based on the Torah and on God, then Ani Hashem lo shaniti, I am God, I did not change. You don't go ahead and change the rules of the Torah, even if it's not convenient. I'll give you a very simple example. Have you heard of Rav Mordechai Kaplan, the Reconstructionist Rav Mordechai Kaplan?
Yeah.
So Rav Mordechai Kaplan, as you know, said there's no God. Chas v'sholem, there's no God. The second thing he said was, you have to keep every last mitzvah. Knew how do those two things jive? He called it a Jewish civilization. Jews live with a certain Jewish way of living. And one of their ways of living is they wear tzitzis, and they go to shul on Shabbos without carrying, and they eat kosher, and they check eggs for blood, and many other things. It's called Jewish civilization, nothing to do with God. We won't talk this morning where that particular point of view the Reconstructionists went to when they took it to its logical conclusions. I can just tell you today that the following story I don't believe happens with a Reconstructionist. So Mordechai Kaplan is walking to shul one day on Shabbos, walking with a handkerchief tied around his neck. Now, for those listening that have no idea why he would do something like that, I will explain. Once upon a moon, we didn't have this package of tissues. You know, the package of tissues with the heksher on it? We didn't have. Why didn't we have it? Not because it wasn't kosher, but because we didn't have tissues, so people used something called a handkerchief. Okay? The handkerchief was used to wipe your nose, wipe your sweat, etc. And people would hold a handkerchief for that reason. They didn't have tissues, not in shul and not outside of shul. So he tied it around his neck because on Shabbos, one of the 39 malachos is carrying. He didn't want to carry. And they went up to him and he said, Professor Kaplan, what are you doing? And they said, Jewish civilization is we don't carry on Shabbos. Very nice. About 2 weeks later, they see the same scene, but this time he's holding an umbrella. Now, I won't go in this morning. Is there an isser to hold them to have an umbrella on Shabbos if there is an Eruv? That's a whole question in and of itself. But assuming that there is an isser, because that's what the Jewish people have decided, everyone will agree that you can't carry it, obviously, with no Eruv. So he's carrying an umbrella to shul. And they said, Professor Kaplan, what happened to the Jewish civilization? And he gave the following insightful answer. You're all ready for his answer? For a Jewish civilization, you don't get a cold. I repeat, for a Jewish civilization, you don't get a cold. Namely, if it was based on Torah and Yirat Shemayim and God commanded me, then yes, you have to bundle up and you can't hold an umbrella. I was in Montreal about 2 weeks ago and Shabbos morning there was a terrible ice storm. Okay, bundling up to go to shul was a 15-minute ordeal. Putting on this pants and that, and then the coat and the hat and the gloves and spikes on the bottom of your shoe so you don't slip in the ice. And that's the way you walk to shul, and only a nut would go out in that weather. But because we believe in Yirat Shamayim and God commanded us, then even if it's not convenient, we do it. But if it's inconvenient for someone who doesn't believe it's God-based, they won't do it. So, Begin, for example. It was very convenient when he was in the opposition to be against any deportation of Jews. Once he got in to be prime minister, it's no longer convenient politically. So he did what he did. I'll give another example just to enlighten it. How many people know or are offended when they read Parshat Yitro? Anyone here get offended in Parshat Yitro? Anyone? I don't know. Harold, he's a nice guy. Don't you get offended when it says Lo Tignov? Did you ever think of stealing from someone? I don't know. Bruce, you never get offended when you read Lo Tirtzach? Like God has to tell you, hey, Bruce, I got a secret. Thou shall not murder.
Obviously, people are doing it.
Huh? Said Rav Altman. Of course most people don't murder or steal. But when do they do it? When they think it's convenient. Namely, when it's inconvenient not to anymore. For example, I'll give you a simple example. I'm not saying this is the isser of abortion, but assuming it's the isser of abortion, many out there will not kill a soul, won't even kill a bug, but they would abort a baby. Because aborting a baby is not really alive, etc. But if you believe in the absolute truth of the Torah, then even when it's inconvenient, and even when there's many reasons, you're going to keep the rules of the Torah all the way, including that not stealing even when you find all the reasons humanly to do it. So those are the two Torahs I wanted to share from Rav Altman. One is the source of the word B'nai Yisrael, and the other is, of course, the absolute of the Torah versus coming to the same conclusions not through the Torah. Yes, Bruce?
Well, we have cases in the Torah that we refer back to and 1960, when Chazal felt that, let's say, a kid of more than one wife, or Yibum is not a good idea, which we changed the halacha to a deal with, I guess, the present circumstance, or when Rebbe wanted to vote to annul fasts, for whatever the reason was, and then he was overruled, but he wanted to actually annul them. So it seems that Judaism does evolve with the times, one way or another, and it's not as if it's everything's absolute black and white. That there is a process at work here.
Answer, Bruce. Judaism does not change with time. Judaism applies its non-changing rules to the times. Namely, no one in their right mind would say, listen, it's primitive today. It's absolutely archaic that if a woman is married to a man and the man is killed by terrorists and he did not leave a male, that we should forget about both Yibum and Chalitza and just let her get married to whomever she wants. No one will say that. However, which of the two options will you apply? Namely, I'm not giving up the law, but what, how I apply it, that of course changes in each and every generation. And you gave many examples when you spoke. I'll give the example of the Torah changing, okay? But it didn't change, and I'll explain why. The example of the, oh, we talked about it many times. Does the Torah not command each and every one of us to have a personal Sefer Torah? I don't know. It says, Ve'ata tikitfu lachem et ashira azot v'lamedat b'nei Yisrael, sima b'fiyem. Very clear. Rambam codifies it. That's a mitzvah. All the codifiers know. It's a mitzvah. It's the last mitzvah given in the Torah. Number 613. How many people do you know have a personal Sefer Torah? So, comes along the Rosh and says, with due respect, the Torah explained why this law should apply. It said, why should you have a personal Sefer Torah, v'lamdat b'nei Yisrael, to teach the Jewish people? Does anyone in their right mind, they want to learn Torah, take out a Sefer Torah today and learn from it? Says the Rosh, we only use it for public Torah readings, etc. We don't use it to learn from. So the way to fulfill this law, which doesn't change, is through buying books. So you would say Judaism changed? Oh yeah, the way we celebrate Judaism changed. But the law didn't change, its application did. Now that, Bruce, is a very, very, very far cry from saying, let's forget about the laws, they're primitive, they're no longer. Okay, let's forget about Yibum, let's forget about Torah, and the mitzvah to write it, because bottom line is, it's archaic, it's ancient, it's no longer in the vogue. That we will never do. We will definitely say, the times have changed, let's apply the ancient, non-changing rules to the new times. Did I make myself clear? What don't you understand? Because this is more important than anything we ever teach. I'll explain. Of course I'll explain. Rebbe, who wanted to cancel, first of all, according to some Rishonim, wanted to cancel only Tisha B'Av that was pushed off to Yud B'Av. He wasn't going to cancel the fasts. Only on that particular year, like this year, by the way. That's number one. Number two, what is Rebbe doing? Rebbe's saying, I'm learning the law and I'm applying the law to the new times. Never in my right mind would I come and say, let's just eradicate the law. If I would say that, it wouldn't be in the Gemara. There'd be a Deah saying the whole Torah is bupkis, or this law is bupkis, and that's it. Rebbe said, let's learn the law and its applications and its ramifications and its details and see how does it apply to the new reality. The new reality in the times of Rebbe was that the Jewish people weren't about to be killed, so it's not a time of shmad, as the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Yud Chet Amud Bet says. It's a time where things are pretty hunky-dory, though we don't have a temple. In that situation, does a fast apply or not? That's what Rebbe wanted to do. He never once said, forget about these fast days, they're just inconvenient, we should go home and contemplate. That would be eradicating the laws of the Torah. He said, within the laws of the Torah, let's learn how does this apply to the new reality, whatever the new reality is. And there's many examples of this, endless examples of this, okay? There's an issue of modesty. Does modesty stay the same No, modesty means being modest in your talk, in your behavior, in your dress. Well, how does it apply itself to the fashions today? Different than it applied itself to the fashions of 20 years ago. And many, many other examples. But that's a far cry from saying, forget about Sneat. No longer.
So how do we know that Mordecai Kaplan wasn't saying, I'm not saying it's okay to carry an umbrella. I'm saying, listen, we have to weigh it against the correct method. Getting a cold in certain people can kill you.
Because exactly that. Mordecai Kaplan didn't say pikuach nefesh. He didn't say, I'm within the law, and the law is only eradicated through pikuach nefesh, and I feel it's pikuach nefesh. He didn't say that. He also didn't say that, in my opinion, you can carry an umbrella. Because I learned the Rishon and the Achron, and I put it together. No, he said, of course you're not allowed to carry an umbrella without an eruv, but getting a cold eradicates that law. That's a far cry from saying, let's learn, is umbrella really not allowed? Okay, after we establish that, is it really not allowed to carry in Manhattan? And after we get it all together, we'll come to a conclusion, which may be different than other Orthodox rabbis. That's not what Mordechai Kaplan said. He basically said, I don't even have to look in the books. Getting a cold is more important than any law. I can eradicate any law when it's inconvenient. Not to mention, Bruce, that getting a cold, as you probably know, is not a pikuach nefesh. In any case, that's what Rabbi Mordechai, that's what Rabbi Waldman said, and Yehi Zichro Baruch, he was an amazing Jewish leader, one of the founders of the yeshiva in Kiryat Arba, and Bichlal Kiryat Arba. You should know one more thing about him, and I say this because it hurts me. He lived in the lap of being in a modest, tiny apartment in Kiryat Arba, never moved. And I think that's a vanishing breed today. If you just look at the prime ministers of Israel, where did Ben-Gurion live?
A little apartment in Jerusalem.
He lived in a little apartment in Jerusalem. He actually had a little apartment in Tel Aviv, two-room, and he had a little tiny hut in Sde Boker down south. That's what he had. The place was full of books like Arthur's picture there, and that's what the man did. And I have to say, he was modest in his personal behavior. He ate in the kibbutz with all the kibbutznikim. Yes, he believed in it. That was his ideology, socialism. But he lived by it. He did not live in the lap of luxury. Same thing with Begin. We mentioned Begin. He has a lot of great zchuyot. He's one of my heroes. Okay? One of them is, he lived his entire life until he became prime minister in a two-bedroom apartment in Tel Aviv. It was so small, Bruce, that when he had to write letters, they would have a table. Now, do you remember the old movies where the bed came out of the wall? Like at night, that's what he had. He had a table up against the wall in the hallway. When he had to work, he put it down, and then no one can pass in the hallway. I guess before he put down the table, he said, anyone need to use the washroom? Anyone want to go take a nap? No, okay, I'm putting down the table. You're all stuck where you are. That's the way he lived. And I think that's a vanishing breed today, because that's not the way I see great Jewish leaders living today. Rabbi Waldman lived that way, and that was the standard. And he never once thought to move. And I think that's a vanishing breed, and it's something to think about and to learn from. So Rabbi Eliezer Waldman, Yehi Zichro Baruch, a great Jewish leader, American origins, and Bezrat Hashem, I hope and pray that his students and many that he influenced will continue his legacy in this world, as I'm sure that in the next world, others are continuing his legacy, he's continuing his legacy there.